safety and other types of activities that are needed were in place and were continued. But a lot of our other types of programming that we do during the summer, activities and those things, were all put on hold. The pools were closed down because of COVID. So a lot of those activities were done. And so we ended up, we finished the year with the budget being okay. We did not exceed our numbers in any way. We were able to maintain our situation, our financial situation in a solid position. And so in that case, you know, we did okay. We made it work. Next year, again, we budget on an annual basis. We anticipated certain revenue reductions still, put those into the budget ahead of time, looked at programs and activities. We plan to go back to full programming for the community in the sense of activities and different youth activities, the lakefront activities. Those are all planned again, but everything hinges on the COVID again. And that will be determined as we get closer to the dates that we do things. So the sooner we are able to get the vaccinations in and people are covered, the faster we'll be opening things up. So it'll be still a little tentative, a little bit every time we move forward as the vaccines get out, then we'll be looking at what we will be opening up and how fast they open up.
What do you expect will be the implications for fulfilling your budget needs in 2021 and in 2022 at this time? Are you expecting the aid that you're going to need from outside, or you think that you're not going to need any special appropriations?
Oh, we would definitely, especially with the vaccinations coming in and those type of activities, even though the county is the entity responsible for the health department, the city ends up paying into that. And it also is that we are requested to help with some of with the vaccinations and other activities that may occur. So there'll be expenses to the city for doing those type of things. And there still will be, you know, as much as we try to budget accordingly, there will be things that we don't expect. Revenues could still be fall short depending on the economy. There are all sorts of things that could happen. So help from the state would be, or state and federal government is one of those things that we are looking to have them do. But again, like any other community, we will do what we need to do to make sure that we get things done.
Are you implementing any special measures to enable you to be able to pivot more quickly than usual in the months and the couple years ahead, Mayor Antaramian?
No, not really, because to be very honest with you, the system is set up so that we can move fairly quickly. We did last year, and we will do so again this year if necessary. So can we maneuver? Yes. Are there costs that would be helpful from the state and federal government so we don't have to use reserves? Absolutely. Those are things that would be very beneficial to the community. But again, can we move and pivot accordingly? Absolutely we can, and we will.
Social justice is the number one topic on the minds of so many people now, locally and across our nation, and even to observers from across the world. What's your outlook in terms of social justice initiatives that you've initiated here in the city of Kenosha, Mayor Antaramian?
Well, we are in the process of moving forward with a number of committees that are going to be looking at different areas that will deal with social justice, will deal with our relationships, will deal with education. All of those types of activities are things that we are going to be looking at and working with the community. The whole process has to be, it has to be the community working together to resolve the issues that we have. And we have started that process by having meetings and talking with a lot of the young people. The clergy is very involved at this point in time, and you'll see, you know, many of the activists and law enforcement all involved, because everybody needs to be involved. We need to look at it from a basis of what we have to do to improve our community in general. And that's what we are going to be moving forward on.
Do you have any concerns about translating that committee work into action steps?
No, I think that a lot of that will depend, a lot really works with how the committees work together to resolve things. And I think that there are areas that we all can look at and say that we need to do some things here, or an example, dealing with young people, leadership programs, things like that are just, those are naturals. I don't see things like that being problematic. Are there going to be some issues that are going to be difficult for people to get the, to wrap around? Of course. But that doesn't mean we don't tackle them. It doesn't mean we don't get them done. I believe in this community, and I believe we will do well.
With respect to law enforcement, we've heard infinite comments, reports, and criticisms and praise for our law enforcement officers in the city of Kenosha, and God knows we depend upon them, and I appreciate what they do. Most of them do a fantastic job 100% of the time. However, Jacob Blake incident has caused a lot of consternation, and I was quite interested to see that our district attorney seemed to indicate that state statutes, police policies, training procedures, and manuals tied his hands in terms of whether it was possible to bring a criminal prosecution. At least that's how it seemed to me, listening to some of his remarks. What do you foresee in terms of review of police policies and procedures for the city in the coming year, sir?
Well, the city always reviews our policies and procedures. That's nothing that is unusual to us to do. And I think that you also have to be understanding that the DA makes determinations on the facts that he has and which he has looked at. And I have every faith in the DA and what he does and how he does things. I think that he does a very good job. The issues of the how we look to the future and how we do things, those are areas that, like I said, we constantly review, looking at training, looking at any number of things that we look at. But I think you'll find that the community will look to the future and move forward.
And I certainly do agree with you that our district attorney has been in the forefront of some social justice initiatives with respect to things that he has done, particularly with respect to diversion. So we know he has that orientation. But it was very interesting to hear his comments during the news conference, and we'll be following up on that, I'm sure, as everyone will be. Mayor Antaramian, I'd like to turn now to a happier topic. So what are you celebrating for the city this year, and what are some of the positive things you're looking forward to in the next few months, sir?
Actually, I think there are, you know, we always look at some of the economic development that is occurring, the infrastructure that's going on. But I think what I am looking forward to this year is going to be more of a year dealing with young people and how we get young people more involved and how we get opportunities for young people for the future. I think to me, that is going to be what this next year really is going to look at as to things that we need to be doing and working on.
Are there any other, is there a second tier of issues that you're concerned about in terms of celebrating?
There's always tiers of issues. There's always things that are going on. I think, like I said, I think dealing with young people is one of the big issues that we need to deal with. But employment is always a major issue. And, you know, the redevelopment of the uptown area with the Innovation Center and with the redevelopment of 22nd Avenue, those are all things that are going to be exciting things that we are going to be doing and moving forward on. But it literally, in my opinion, the place where we need to spend the most time are with our young kids, our young people. We need to make sure that they stay here. We need to make sure that they have opportunities. We need to change our, in some cases, the mix of business and industry that's here so that we are attractive to a lot of these young people to stay. And we need to do a lot more with the skilled trades issues. I think that's one of the big issues that we need to start looking at as to how we're going to deal with that. With the building trades, because when you're looking at the age, and I don't want to age myself, but a whole bunch of us are at that age of retirement, and I think the building trades is an area that there's some huge opportunity for young people, and we need to start looking at how we can work more of them into that system.
Now, you brought up building and rebuilding. What's the next shoe that's going to drop on downtown Kenosha redevelopment on your master plan, which is so exciting for our future? What's the next step we should be looking for?
Well, under the agreement, there's the first two buildings that should be started in the next 6 to 8 months would be the Brindisi, the housing project, and the City Hall. Those will be the first two buildings. So those are the two we're waiting on initially right now.
And what about Uptown? What's the next steps in Uptown? There's been some clearance and removal of collapsed buildings and burned out buildings. What do you see? What are the next couple of steps in Uptown there, Aunt Ramian?
The next couple of steps in Uptown is we have a developer who's looking to put in affordable housing and affordable retail on part of the street. And then also the Brown Bank, the city has purchased, and we're working to put in a number of programs into the Brown Bank that'll be dealing with young people, with non-for-profits for a company called Generator, which works for getting entrepreneurs and helping people start their own businesses. The universities and colleges are looking to put some facilities there. So there's a whole bunch of things between that and the developer. And hopefully next year, you'll start seeing some construction work on the Chrysler site.
With the old Brown Bank building, is that going to be renamed as a community center then?
Not as a community center, because that's not what it's going to be. But it will, and renaming we may do, but again, those are things that are kind of down the road. Right now, I need to get the building purchased, which is in the process, and then I have to get the building fixed up, and there's a lot of work to be done.
As you look ahead in the coming year, are there any issues that keep you up at night? What's your main one or two concerns for making progress in the next year? Are there roadblocks you'd like to see removed? Are there things that are troubling to you that require outside help?
I think the one of the biggest issues that we have are basically dealing in two different areas. One basically is financial. There's so many things that I'd like to see happen in our community that we don't have the funds to do. And that is frustrating to me because we are limited by law as to what I can spend. The state has not been overly generous in helping us with shared revenue anymore. I mean, that hasn't happened in quite a while. Those type of things have limited some of the activities we would like to have done and has limited some of the infrastructure. So maybe the feds will change part of that with the new president and the new Congress and Senate, that they may look at local units of government more friendly than they do at the present time. So that would be helpful. The other is always going to be, basically how we deal with law enforcement and crime in the community. Because crime is one of those areas that is always a concern. Safety is an issue for people. And that's why it's important for the community to work together with law enforcement as we move forward, because that is an area that all of us need to work together to succeed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mayor John Antaramian of Kenosha. And now we turn to the mayor of Racine, Corey Mason, to get an update on what's going on in Racine. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I'd like to start out by talking about money. People really are interested in money. It's the top of their lists. What's the budget look like for the city of Racine in the coming year in 2021? And maybe a look ahead at 2022. What are your concerns or things you're expecting? Because we do know that there can be a lag with recessions in terms of how that affects the municipalities. So
yeah,
how does it look? Revenue, expense, and your taxes.
Yeah, money and budgets are always at the top of everyone's list. I mean, there's certainly, what you budget reflects your priorities, and there's a social dimension to it. But structurally, how your budget comes into play really matters. So we've been in a position where the last couple of years, because of the fact that the city's landlocked in a way that, say, the city of Kenosha is not, and because of the restrictions that the legislature has put on local units of government, our ability to even keep up with the cost of inflation just is not allowed under the law right now. So the city's had to go through some downsizing and reducing the number of positions. So we, through attrition, had to eliminate almost 5% of our employees in public safety, over 22 positions in police and fire, in addition to some cuts in some other departments. So certainly wasn't the place that we wanted to be. And it really underscores why we need partners at the state and federal level that will allow cities to just even be able to maintain the current services that they have, and acknowledge that, costs do go up every year, and governments need to be able to act accordingly to keep up with those costs.
So what's the response that you have in order to cope with that in the rest of this year? And what's your outlook for 2022, Mayor?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, obviously, you know, keeping the economy on track is going to be critical for everyone, although we don't have a sales tax source of revenue in Racine County. We're one of the few counties that does not have a local sales tax. So in terms of that, we're not able to see the benefit of a sales tax, but it also means in a down economy, we're not missing revenues there. But what it really means is we need partners at the state and federal level. We need more flexibility from state government and an ability to maintain basic, you know, public safety. And it means that we need good partners at the federal level. I'm very optimistic. We have a new president who's just come into office, and they're talking about lots of resources in terms of infrastructure, and that's great. I just hope that as they're putting out relief packages to help us disseminate the vaccine and other things, they will also be funding the local public servants who have to do that work as well. And so I'm optimistic there that we can get some resources to be able to do it. But big picture, I mean, I think you'd hear this from local units of government across the board. It has become more difficult for cities and local jurisdictions to flourish because of the restrictions that we get from our state and local partners, or our state partners that are placed on local units of government. And that's a real long-term existential crisis that we have to overcome and get through if cities are going to be able to thrive and continue.
They seem to think in Madison that they know better than we do at the local level, don't they?
Well, it is a bit curious. I mean, it's the party that's supposed to be for local control, but when it comes to a whole host of issues, this is a very peculiar conservative approach that this legislature has taken in the last decade to really restrict local control. And so that's it's certainly been a tension point.
We're also thinking top of mind right now on social justice initiatives. We've certainly been reminded about that at the federal and the local levels in the past year. Mayor Mason of Racine, but one of the things you're doing that I would put under that category really is a health initiative. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about the health initiative in the city of Racine?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly the pandemic has really laid bare the disparities that exist in our communities and in our country, and certainly healthcare is chief amongst those. I mean, people who have access to healthcare on an ongoing basis have weathered the storm and have access to testing and other resources that people don't have really struggled to find. And so we've really stepped in to the breach to try to fill that. But the city of Racine doesn't have a federally funded health clinic the way Kenosha has a couple of them. Milwaukee has well over a dozen of them. The city of Racine is the largest community in the Midwest without a federal health clinic for those folks who are uninsured or underinsured to be able to go to, that doesn't require people to go to the emergency room just to get basic medical care. And so we've taken on the commitment with our partners in the school district and in the county and the Gateway Technical College to apply for that status. And the city of Racine has committed to building a health clinic right next to Julian Thomas School, which is right in our Lincoln King neighborhood, and should be able to provide health services to thousands of area residents if we can be successful. So our hope is to spend 2021 planning it and fundraising for it, and spending 2022 building it, and really do a lot to address the healthcare disparities that exist in our community by bringing this really important service to that neighborhood and to the broader community.
Well, that's terrific. I congratulate you and all of the partners you've worked with to bring that about. I have looked from afar at that process, and it's enough to make you rip whatever hair you have left out to try to get that designation, but it's really crucial for the city of Racine. That's wonderful. But you've also done something else that I find exceptionally strategic that I also congratulate you for, and it's called the Financial Empowerment Center. Tell me about that.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking about this. We're really excited about this. This is from a partnership that we established with Bloomberg Philanthropies. But it's the first Financial Empowerment Center in the state of Wisconsin, although they exist in a couple dozen communities across the country. So we have found, believe it or not, if we want to get more minority homeowners, or we want more people to be able to build wealth. And if you look at inequities that exist in this country and certainly in Wisconsin, you know, those gaps that exist between people of color and their white neighbors are substantial. You know, one of the biggest ways that people build wealth is through the home that they may own. So what we have found, though, is it's not as simple to just say, well, let's help people buy a house or give people a grant or whatever it is. That so much of the success of people being able to get to a place where they can be approved for a home loan or a car or to get themselves out of debt or to improve their credit score or whatever it might be really takes some real planning and some counseling. And so, you know, just handing somebody a brochure on financial literacy and saying save more doesn't really cut it. And so what the Financial Empowerment Center does is it provides free counseling to city residents one-on-one. You know, some people just need a couple sessions, some people might need 10, where they can set specific goals on how to save up for a down payment or how to improve their credit scores or how to pay down their credit card debt or deal with their student loans or whatever it might be, that, you know, whatever those things might be that are really preventing them from being able to build wealth and qualify as a homeowner or to get a lower interest rate when they buy their next car. And it's one of these things that, you know, as somebody who's passionate about addressing inequity, this wasn't the first thing that would have come to my mind as a new mayor. Now, 3 years in, I really realize how important this service is for our residents to be able to be successful and to build their own wealth and move into the middle class. And so we're really excited to provide this service. We launched it in December. And, you know, people can go to racinefec.org if they're city residents, to learn more about it and set up an appointment. But we're really excited about what we think we can do with this to serve residents, reduce inequity, and build wealth, regardless of your zip code or your race.
Now, you said professional consultations with professionals. Yeah. And I want to nail that down because I think a distinguishing difference with this program than with other very fine and well-meaning and partially successful programs in the past is that we're not talking about someone, a volunteer like me who gets some training for in front of a computer for a couple of weeks. We're talking about financial professionals, right?
That's correct. I mean, and all of our counselors had to go through very rigorous, not only training, but testing to certify that they would be qualified to give this kind of advice to people. And so they learn how important confidentiality is, and then they learn about how to give the best possible advice. And again, because they're affiliated with this nonprofit and supported by the city, individuals don't have to worry about, are they going to try and sell me something or will they sell my data? Or, you know, so it's not at all judgmental. It's meant to encourage and help and empower our residents with people who are trained and certified to do that work.
Well, I wish you well with that. And I hope everyone takes advantage of it who has the opportunity to. Now, that's as if that's not enough on social justice. You've had a couple other arrows in your quiver, too. I know you've cameras on all your police officers for the good that can do both for the police department and for the city. Anything else you want to go into, Corey Mason, mayor of Racine?
Around policing, I mean, very proud of the work that we did to put body cameras on all of our officers. And that policy has been well adopted and yielded real transparency when needed. So pleased about that. We certainly had a discussion this summer about police reform and adopting things that can lead to interactions that could lead to use of force policy. And, you know, pleased to say that for the most part, we have a very responsible and responsive police department that hasn't had a large number of unfortunate events like we've seen in other jurisdictions. But still, we wanted to make sure that there were specific policies in place so we don't train for people to do chokeholds. We don't certainly have that in our policies at all. But coming out of the George Floyd murder, we wanted to specifically say in policy, chokeholds are expressly prohibited, right? We wanted to make sure that we had an independent and robust police and fire commission to make sure that the oversight of our police and fire departments is actually independent and not viewed as an appendage of the police department. So we've done a lot of work to, I think, really improve the public trust and confidence in our police department. That builds on, you know, decades of already existing community-oriented policing that we've done here in Racine under the leadership of Art Howell, who is sadly retiring in just a couple months, and so we will miss his leadership as he departs.
Well, that's all wonderful, but there must be things that keep the mayor of Racine up at night. And I wonder what those things might be, Mayor Mason.
I mean, I will say, I mean, 2020 was easily the hardest year of my professional life, and obviously not just for me, but for everyone. But certainly the impact of COVID on people's health, on their livelihoods, on small businesses, on the disproportionate way it impacts people of color, you know, getting people to a place where they will get tested if needed, maintain the social distancing and wear a mask and follow the ordinance if required. And then when the vaccine comes, you know, we're really going to have two challenges. The immediate one, which will be people who want to get vaccinated as quickly as possible and wanting to partner with our health system so that we can do that. But then there's going to be another wave of people who are going to be skeptical, who might be resistant to getting vaccinated. And we really need every adult who is able to get the vaccine for it to be effective. So I will say that, you know, definitely COVID and its impacts are front of mind. But then certainly our inequities are front of mind as well. I mean, we've been, Racine County has been labeled as the second worst place for African-Americans because of the disparities between mostly city residents and our suburban neighbors are just so substantial. And so the work of closing those gaps and inequities between our persons of color who live in our neighborhoods and their white neighbors in the city and outside the city, finding a way to close those gaps really continues to be a major focus of my administration, and getting at those inequities and having better housing policy and housing enforcement to make sure that people have a safe and healthy place to live. Those will continue to be priorities and the things that present challenges and opportunities for us as we move ahead.
Are you making some provision to help protect the small businesses in Racine so that they don't all disappear, the wonderful small businesses and services and the restaurants?
Yeah, we did $1 million, nearly $1 million in small business grants in April of last year. Now, this was at a time when we were thinking, hopefully COVID will just last for 2 or 3 months and we can get to the other side of this and you know, help people bridge that area. And so we were able to do that eventually. As I mentioned earlier, I mean, we had to cut almost $4 or $5 million worth of expenses from our own budget. So the resources and availability to be able to do that are really limited from the city directly. But we now have the first wave of the federal PPP money that we were able to help city businesses apply for and get information out about that. And there's now another round of PPP dollars that are available. So we really want to make sure that we're encouraging all of our businesses, big, medium, and small, that are eligible for that to make sure to apply to do that so they can keep people on the payroll and keep their businesses afloat.
And now we're going to turn to the city administrator of Elkhorn, the third largest city in our Signal area, James Heilman. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, top of mind for most people, as we've said in the previous two interviews, is taxes. And that means your budget and your revenue, your expenses in the city of Elkhorn for 2021 and also 2022. You know, as I've said earlier, there's a time lag often when there's a recession in terms of how that hits municipal finances, and you've got state aid to worry about, and maybe keep all your fingers crossed for federal aid. So what's your financial picture look like as an entity, and what's that going to be the impact of that on the residents?
At this time, we did see a rather large increase in 2021. We had a referendum that passed for full-time firefighters. So our tax base did see a relatively significant increase. And we thank the citizens for supporting us in that and moving forward with that. As far as the information that I have to date, it doesn't appear that the state of Wisconsin is really in any fiscal problems, I guess I would call it, based on the COVID and the pandemic and things we've all faced. The city in particular, we did apply for CARE funding for funds that were eligible, and our total was a little bit in excess of $40,000. So We didn't have a significant amount of expenses, but we did have some, and we're very thankful for the CARES funding that supported us. In 2022, we'll get back into more of a balanced budget. I don't expect any, well, they're always balanced, but I wouldn't expect any referendums or any big spending items. I think 2022 in comparison to 2021 will be very tame and probably pretty much a straight line as far as tax effect going forward.
You mentioned that referendum for what I understand is to be a full-time fire department. And I thought it was rather remarkable that I learned that it passed first time around. Referenda to spend more money don't necessarily succeed on the first try. Just ask some school boards around Southeast Wisconsin. You want to talk about that a little bit and why that's important?
Well, I was a little leery myself because we had spent 18 months putting together a great plan for that referendum. And then COVID came along and changed everyone's life, including ours. It eliminated a lot of the face-to-face meetings we wanted to have. And I worked in another community for 23 years, and referendums, especially for schools, which do them quite regularly, was a very hard thing. What I've seen in my 7 years in Elkhorn, I've seen the citizenry that really studies the issue, and they've backed the schools on, I think, every referendum since I've been here. This is a first as a city. We don't like to have to use them, but to go to a full-time fire department, there wasn't any choice. We provide the information as best we could through mailings and a few meetings that we were able to do. But the fire department as an entity, like many communities, we're in tough shape. And the time with volunteer or the paid on call has kind of passed. And we really needed to come up with a plan. And this was it. And the citizens backed us, and we appreciate that. Now we're able to, when that alarm goes off, that truck and that ambulance is out the door immediately. And we're hoping that people see the benefit to the service that we've provided for them.
Well, I would think that in addition to just having a body on duty at all time, it's even deeper than that, isn't it? Doesn't this also provide for training and a depth of training and experiences to prepare for situations that might otherwise be more difficult with all volunteers?
Yes, when you're on a all volunteer or a paid on call, everyone's got a full-time job and job family responsibilities. So the training, they have to take extra time out to provide training. And we will still have our paid on call personnel and volunteers. They're very important. They're an important nucleus for the larger responses we have. But the people that are on, part of their day will be spent in doing training and updating records. And training will be a much more timely thing. Like you said, they won't be trying to squeeze hours out of their day or not be able to make it. That'll be part of their requirement as an employee to stay up to date on the training.
I think it's quite a nice idea, this blend of professional, full-time, and on-call professionals and who are more volunteer support. It seems to be a really good way of marshalling the resources of your community, given your size and what's appropriate for your needs.
Yes, and I keep repeating myself, but I do thank the citizens of this community because I think this was the best plan. It's the best way to serve this public service, public safety need, but it's quite expensive. And we didn't hide that it was going to be quite expensive, but we put Band-Aids on this problem for years, and it was time, in my opinion, to address it directly and let the citizens decide, and they did.
I also suspect that it would have an impact with respect to the attractiveness of your community for businesses and for insurance rates, and particularly as lots of new construction goes up. And I imagine that that would be a factor, too. It's something that most people wouldn't think of. Now, I'd like to move on because one of the other big topics right now is social justice in all of its manifestations, whether that's police procedures or systemic teaching in programs, or whether it's even in terms of the availability of information about health and information about finances. We've talked about all of those things with the mayors of Racine and Kenosha recently here. So what's going on in Elkhorn? What are people doing in terms of the common good there?
Well, if you talk specifically about the police department, we do have a police and fire commission and a police chief that's very experienced. So they keep a lot of the policies and things up to date. Just recently, we were going through community development block grants. So kind of a thank you to the federal government that including in some of those federal dollars, they put things in there that they think communities need to be aware of and bring it forward. And we just recently passed a policy. It's called a policy to prohibit the use of excessive force and enforce applicable state and local laws prohibiting physical barring entrances, exits for nonviolent civil rights demonstrations. And what we're trying to get toward there is for the public to know that nonviolent demonstrations are allowed and there will not be, there will be no trying to move them up or not happen. They're allowed. Also, if they have them in a physical location, we will not block or bar that. We will try to do our best on our end to make sure that no violent situations occur. So, I mean, to me, that was an eye opener just to read it. And so while it's a simple thing, it's something you put into words and it's something you sign and support as a city. And I think it's steps in the right direction. But I also think our police and fire commission does a good job with the fire, our police chief, in making sure all the policies and procedures are up to date. And that's a regular routine that we go through. I'm not intimately involved with that, but it does come from the police chief to me on what they want to update and why.
I wonder, What keeps you up at night? I'd like to ask that question. What are the things that you worry about most in terms of Elkhorn that you think are important for the future in terms of very practical, tactical things or even strategic things? What keeps you and the other city leaders up at night?
Well, I think number one to everybody, I mean, we're all looking for additional funding and we know specifically infrastructure, I think in most communities, is lags behind, but whether it's unfortunate or just the state of what we have to deal with, is we can't get to everything we have to get to. So we have to prioritize. You have to use great time and looking at all the different infrastructure possibilities and which ones have the priorities and which ones don't. And I have certain thoughts, obviously, but my job is to make sure that the council has all this information, complete information, so that when we're moving forward, we're talking about streets, sewer, water, electric, stormwater. These are things that have to have a priority list. They have to have more than a one-year look. It has to be a 5 to 7 year look at what are we going to be doing and how does this 7 year map look? How are we, when we get there, what's it going to look like? And then what are we going to have in front of us after that? So, to me, that's what kind of keeps me up sometimes at night is trying to figure out what to do next because there's so many needs as far as infrastructure goes. And the funding issues, you always look at those and taxes. Obviously, I would have no problem sleeping if I can guarantee everyone their tax bill is going to be $1 a year every year. That'd be great. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, some sleepless nights trying to make sure that we can do everything we need to do in a reasonable way.
Well, maybe the next city administrator should know how to spin straw into gold. We'll talk about that in another program.
I haven't learned it.
What about telecommunications, internet infrastructure in particular, a city administrator, Heilman? The Elkhorn city area and the surrounding area, do you feel you're impoverished? Especially now in this internet-only era of work for so many of us, the stranglehold at certain times of day is really quite bad.
You know, and we just did an upgrade here, and I think the city is quite lucky from the fact that we have competing forces. We have two different companies. Normally, you're going to see a lot of Charter Internet, and that's very solid and a good product. But we also have another company here, TDS, and they're competing for that service. So from both a price standpoint and a quality standpoint, I've never really had this luxury of having two competitors, and it's great. So I think from an internet standpoint, as far as the city general goes, I think we're in pretty good shape. I think there's a lot of products out there and a lot of quality. The one thing, you know, I can remember the early ages because of my age of internet, it does get a little pricey as you move to that higher quality. And it's another budgetary item for everybody to try to figure out how to do that. So we'll try to provide, like in our situation, when we were going to just Zoom meetings for a while, we made sure that if people didn't have that access, they came here and we made sure that they had the ability to do everything that needed to do if they didn't have internet service. And, you know, but I think our products are good, and I think there's competition, and I think we're in pretty good shape here in Elkhorn.
And now, why don't you share with us something good that we all could look forward to in Elkhorn in the next year or so? What do you if you're to sell me and coming to the city of, or moving there, what's your points?
Well, I think a lot of the events that got canceled over the last year, we're looking in 2021 to those coming back, and I know the Chamber of Commerce works very hard on those projects and is very proud of them. Kind of like the food trucks that we bring in, and you have a caravan of them, and it's really a fun day. They have their Corn and Brat Day, which got canceled last year. They did do their Oktoberfest, but it was very changed, okay? It wasn't the large crowds that we're used to, and the music, and you know, all of the people selling all their goods and foods. And so we're looking forward to all of those great chamber events that they put on. Also, our recreation department has a slew of programs, mostly geared toward the younger, but that's okay. And we're looking at getting all those programs back to where we want them to be, because that's what makes everything fun. We want our 4th of July fireworks to be the big extravaganza. It's been for years. We got a great location. We got a great park. Got a lot of vantage points to look at. We want to have that too. We want our pool open. Our pool was not open last year. It's like its third or fourth year, I think now, when we built it. And that was decided by the taxpayers also. And they want to use that pool. And we want them to use it. So all these bright sunshine things are going to happen in 2021. And we're all going to put this behind us.
Well, that's great to hear. I want to thank all three of my guests today on this report from the cities. Mayor John Antaramian of Kenosha, Mayor Corey Mason of Racine, and the City Administrator of Elkhorn, James Heilman. And I remind all of you listeners to get informed and get involved in your city government. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.